The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance.
BTL, coming at you.
Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew spent some time Monday Night Football last night, a couple of games, but the New Orleans Texans game, the last minute was incredible.
Completely out of this conversation because I have no idea what happened, so enlighten me.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
The dude hit a 58-yard field goal with no time left on the clock for New Orleans.
Did his job.
Well, he missed one earlier.
Didn't the Saints kicker used to be former OU kicker Garrett Hartley, who actually was at the Bassmaster Classic Media Day?
Yeah.
In
Houston?
No, it was in Louisiana when it was on the Red River.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I believe you're right. Wow, that goes.
How about that? I just correlated last night's Monday Night Football opener to bass fishing from 5 years ago at the Classic. I'm also going to crack this because I'm...
Which one did you grab?
I grabbed...
I really like the bubbly, man.
The bubbly, sparkling water, peach bubbly.
Oh, that's the same one I have. It's one of the better ones. The apple is the best one.
Oh, that is atrocious. I'm fairly sure these were invented to mix with vodka, Mark. Were they not?
No, that's not how they're marketing it at all. They got me hooked, but I got a freaking refrigerator full.
Sparkling water.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
With flavor.
Zaldane, I can't even talk now. Zaldane drank an entire can of this during the show yesterday and didn't complain once.
That's right.
He's a trooper.
It's good. No calories, no fat, no sugar, no nothing.
It also just occurred to me, when you first log on to the Bass Zone, that photo there that's in the background.
Okay.
That's Gunnersville, isn't it? The bridge.
Yeah.
I just saw that. I mean, it's been like that for a year, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, that bridge, and I said, that's Sailboat Bridge, and then I was like, wait, no, it's not. That's Gunnersville.
Yeah.
Literally looking at a pillar right now where I caught an 8-pounder, the biggest bass I've ever caught on a glide.
It's taken you a year to figure that one out?
It's taken me a year. Now it's transitioning to the fancy jumping bass.
Well, I'm getting ready to change that up as we approach 2020. 2020, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
You know what tomorrow is, right? Obviously, it's the anniversary of September 11th, 2001.
Zaldane's birthday.
It's also Zaldane's birthday, and it is also exactly 1 year since the Bass Pro Tour was announced. 1 year.
They announced it on September 11th.
Yes, they did.
That's right.
365 days since we sat in the studio with the press release. Remember, we had Dave Mercer on that day. We knew something was going down.
Yeah.
Mercer was talking about what was going on. We get off the air, and 30 minutes later, the press release comes out for the inaugural Bass Pro Tour. So maybe tomorrow, we have a big show tomorrow. Gray Buck, the winner of the Oneida Open, will be on. But maybe we can kind of reflect over 1 year ago today, maybe go back and see what we said a year ago and see how it's applicable to what is going on today.
I did not realize that until you mentioned that. Yeah, 1 year. Wow.
Also, the next question is, like, on the top of the BTL deal, like where me and you are standing there, okay, what city is that in the background?
Oklahoma City, I think.
No, we don't have that many big buildings.
I think it's Oklahoma City.
Is it?
I think so. Okay. I tried to get Oklahoma City on there. I think that's what I did.
All right.
All right, good show today, folks. We're going to have Bradley Hallman on live via Skype from Grand Lake, Oklahoma. Somewhat the center of attention this month in the professional bass
Somewhat? Okay, let's
run
it.
I didn't know of something else. I mean, you got a cup going on somewhere,
let's
I guess.
Run it down. We just had idea. The BFL Super on Grand, the final BFL of the season. Kind of a stingy Grand Lake.
Yeah, but the usual suspects doing well.
For some of them. Yeah. Brad didn't catch it. I didn't want to talk to him about that, though. It was kind of his strategy. He said he was looking to
setting
quote,
things up.
He said he was looking to quote freak show it. We'll ask him what that means.
He's shooting for what? 2 days, probably 36 pounds, maybe?
Way more than that. I mean, it didn't pan out. He didn't weigh in a fish. So we'll talk to him about that. But he wasn't down about it. He was trying to freak show it. He wasn't going to beat the bank for 10 pounds. He was either going to come in with nothing or 25 pounds. So anyway, you got that super coming on.
Yep.
Then you've got a bunch of guys out there right now, including Mr. Hallman, practicing for the Bassmaster Open, which has been scheduled for Grand.
That is correct.
Then you have Nichols Championship coming up. You have the Skeeter Championship coming
up. Yeah, but people
in
New York don't care about that.
I'm just talking about what's going on in the Oklahoma scene.
They don't care about that.
Then you have the third Bass Pro Tour Cup for the 30 anglers from stages 5 and 6. The top 30 anglers are fishing somewhere in Oklahoma. No one knows where. That takes place sometime this month.
The pump back.
Yes. Put them all in mini boats. Put them all in mini boats. And then you have the Costa that was rescheduled for from Sam Rayburn in June. They flipped it. So now you have that
but
on
that's
Grand.
October.
The very, very beginning. It starts at the end.
That's October.
Okay, very. I'm just talking about what's coming up in the upcoming 3 weeks here,
jeez,
Mark.
I was talking about
and then
September,
you've got the Bassmaster
though.
Elite Series, which was scheduled for Fort Gibson, which then was rescheduled for Fort Gibson, which then was moved to Lake Tenkiller. And that's coming up in a week and a half. So,
it's the center of attention for a little while.
It is. And it'll be interesting to see if the fish at Oklahoma decide to start biting between now and the end of these things, because it is the transition period
right
now.
It's stingy.
It's as it always is. It's not like anything's
stingy.
Wrong.
You know, I think it's even stingy up north in New York.
Did you see what the guy won the super on?
No.
A mag trickworm fishing around docks.
And where, in Wolf Creek?
A brown jig.
Oh, imagine that. Standard protocol.
And horse. That's what he said. I don't know if the guy's fishing any of the other tournaments, but I mean, he literally went with the most standard pattern that you could.
I wish
it's the Jason Christie mid-lake with a spinnerbait pattern.
I really wish that one of these tournaments at Grand Lake. Now, I'm not saying people are dishonest, because I'm sure the guy did throw a brown jig and did throw a trick worm or
I'm
whatever
sure
it was.
That's what he caught him on, yeah.
I just wish one time we would hear of something that is
off
so bizarre.
Like when Edwin caught 29 pounds up the Elk River in the Bassmaster Classic to win.
Yeah.
That one was pretty out there.
Well, back in the day, that happened, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really did.
Zach Burge did some cool stuff. I mean, he had like a 29-pound bag a couple years ago out there in that. But yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying?
But I mean, typically, like, you go back to like when I really first started fishing, like 2008 to 2012, like Jason Christie, how did he always win everything on Grand? What was it? Spinnerbait mid-lake.
Well, it used to be in the 2000s, the late 90s and mid-lake area on good deep structure.
Mm-hmm.
That was the standard tagline. Dude, you could go back. You could look at the stories. You could look at the press releases. Every comment was, well, I caught him in the mid-lake area on a good deep structure. That's what it was.
Narrows it down. It's about a 12-mile stretch. three major
geez,
creeks.
Between the bridge and Governor's Island.
Okay, but let's be honest. When it comes to, now, take out the top level where guys have endorsement deals, where they're working on, we have the guys on and they talk about, we have Micah Frazier on talking about that new Ned rig that came out with Yum. We got guys talking about their baits, Aldane talking about the mega bass stuff. But when it comes down to the regional and local stuff, what benefit is there for a guy to really spill the beans?
If he's looking to escalate up the ladder. Seriously, or he's just an honest dude. Dude, we've discussed this. This has been done for years.
Right, but you don't have to be dishonest. I'm sure they did catch him in good, deep structure.
I'm not saying that anybody was ever dishonest.
But guess what? I know the next year I'm going to fish that tournament. It's going to be the same time of the year. It's going to be the same bite. Maybe I've got a championship the next couple weeks. You think I want to be really specific?
There are people out there, Matthew, that we have crossed paths with over time. They are just incredible. It's saying a ton of information without telling you a damn thing.
Right. Edwin's the master at it. I mean, Edwin's made a career
but
out
I
of
think
it.
The locals are sometimes even better at that.
Yeah, no, 100%.
They will tell you things but not tell you anything that, right. that could spill the beans.
I don't see anything wrong with that. That's part of it.
Is the local tournament or the regional tournament that does not have the live aspect now one of the only remaining true secrets, true strategy taking place where you can't physically see what's taking mm-hmm. place? You know, the strategy of having two or three rods laid out mm-hmm. on the deck of the boat.
Oh, I've done that. I know guys have done that before.
You know, have certain things. Your rods are just an absolute mess thinking mm-hmm. that, oh, wow, you know, he didn't have time to straighten his stuff up. This is actually what he was using that day.
And here's how I find out, you know, kind of a side note on how guys are actually catching them. You know, you talk to guys or you hear them in the weigh-in line talking about it, and they'll say, yeah, I was dragging a jig or something. But then, you know, they're telling a story and they're like, and it hit right at the boat or it loaded up on it or something. And you're like, well, wait a second. You're just saying you were dragging a jig like, or it hammered the bait or something like that.
He got caught with his hand in the cookie jar.
You know, hit it, you know, something like that to where they describe a bite that does not match up with the lure they said they caught the fish on. Yeah.
Well, the effort was there. The execution was not.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, I think local stuff and regional stuff like that where the live element is out, it's kind of the last, pure experience in being stealth mm-hmm. when it comes to what you caught
him. Brad, we'll ask him about this. He's kind of dealing with that too because he's picking up his YouTube game, the Bradley Hallman Fishing YouTube channel, and he's been showing some stuff. He's been showing some juice, Mark.
Yeah.
He's been showing how to find brush piles. He's been showing some Wednesday night winds. He's been out on some lakes in the area where you can kind of maybe tell where he might kind of be fishing.
Did we ever follow back and backtrack to what Mr. Johnson did on the SLR? Remember that whole situation about the greenfish and all that?
No, we never actually did it. But remember, so Chris Johnson posted before the St. Lawrence River. Dude's from Canada. You know he was going to catch him. It was no secret. And the night before the tournament posted, boy, it's stingy. Think these might play? And posted a picture of a largemouth. And we came on here and we said, possibly the greatest sandbag post in the history of professional bass fishing, because you know that guy's not fishing for largemouth. He's fished 50 tournaments in that area.
Yeah.
Then he said he's never fished the river before. All this crazy stuff, and then he goes out and he busts 24 pounds. He ends up finishing second in the tournament, leads it for 3 days, all on smallmouth, of course.
Yeah.
It's an interesting topic of discussion.
Yeah. Strategery. All right, check this out real quick, and then we're going to take a break and come back with Bradley Hallman live from Grand Lake. I'm getting old, dude. Seriously, I talk about it on this show about how old I'm getting. Yesterday, I taught my first three periods at class with my shirt inside out. Inside out.
Collared polo?
Yeah. Not this shirt, obviously.
No one said anything?
Oh, yeah. They did in my finance class.
The third
I started,
one.
Yeah. I started my lecture, and I was writing stuff on the board. And I turn around, and they're all cracking up. And there's, like, three or four students in there that I, you know, coach. And
yeah, they can give you a hard time a little bit.
Yeah, and it's not
that. How did that come up? Did like, people laughing, or did someone raise
laughing,
their hand?
Yeah, they were laughing, and I go, what? What's up? What's wrong? What's so funny? And one of the guys goes, coach, and he does this right here, starts pulling on the shirt, and I look down and I'm like, man. I said, folks, that's what happens when you get old. Can't even dress myself anymore.
Did we really just talk about that for 15 minutes? We did.
Yeah. It's good stuff, man.
Man, I got some stuff I want to circle back to in the last segment.
We'll do that. All right, coming back with Bradley Hallman. Everybody stay tuned.
Serious about catching fish, that HDS is a dead giveaway. You've got the best fish finding sonar money can buy. Time to build the ultimate fish finding system with live sight sonar. See what your lure is doing in real time. Watch fish strike as it happens. See for yourself. Take the live sight sonar 30-day challenge. If live sight sonar doesn't help you find and catch more fish, send it back, no questions asked.
Gamagot's the G Finesse Series. In my opinion, the G Finesse Series is the only lineup of hooks you need for any fishing you do.
But I know a lot of guys haven't used this hook yet.
G Finesse series has the nano coat on the hooks. And the nano coating makes the hooks sharper, smoother, for a better hookup ratio.
20% stronger than black nickel. Wow, that is incredible. That's a lot of strength.
My Gamakatsu G Finesse series, perfect finesse fishing for you.
Check out the G Finesse series of hooks by Gamakatsu.
The heart of the Bass Cat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Bass Cat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Bass Cat. Feel the rush.
Guys, Gerald Swindle, Sunline Pro Staff. If you're a flipper, a slack line hook setter, you're really putting a lot of impact into your hook set, look for the shooter. It comes off the smooth, really smooth. Like when you're flipping, it is smooth. If you're gonna be drop shotting and cranking, sniper's the deal, man. It seems like it's a little bit less likely, like on a sharp hook set, it doesn't seem like it likes it as much, but for coming off the spool on spinning rod, leaders, cranking, like if I'm gonna throw a big plug at Gunnersville, I've still got strong tensile strength. It's not gonna give out on me, but yet the line's thin enough for it to get down. So to me, shooter takes a hook set, snipers for everything else. So if you're gonna slack line them, go shooter.
The name SPRO says it all. SPRO stands for Sports Professionals. When you look at the pro staff that SPRO has brought on board over the past 15 years, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, one got it just then. From the development of the Rock Crawler to the McStick, from the Fat Papa to the Little John series, when you tie a SPRO bait on, you know it's been designed by a professional to get the job done.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability, strength, durability, action, sensitivity, weight and balance, and consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing, pro-driven.
Hey guys, Cliff Perch here with AFCO. I've got the new camo hooded Reaper. It's gonna be a great thing both for fishing and hunting this fall. I can tell you a couple of the features about it. Got the face mask like all the Reapers do, vented in front. It's got the fleece on the inside, so it's really comfortable. It's super warm. When you come down to the pocket, it's got this little snap system called Block Tapey, and it's silent. You know, it doesn't make that sound that other snaps and other systems that hook it together make. Great for hunting, and it's gonna keep that stuff in your pocket.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday, getting ready for our special guest live from kind of the center of attention. At least for a little while.
This is crazy. So they got this roster open.
Yeah.
Or roster.
I like that the fact that they put those rosters out.
For the Central Division, the fourth Central Division, the final. I believe it's the final Central Division. It is. For the Bassmaster Open on Grand Lake. There are... How many anglers do you think are in it from Oklahoma? And then we'll get to Brad. He's fishing on Grand for the 19th consecutive day. 13.
Okay, I was close.
Some names, though. Kurt Warren, Brian Vaughter, John Pilcher, Alan Nail, Nick Kincaid, Toby Hartzell. You kind of have a man crush on Toby Hartzell. Whenever it comes
good,
to
man.
Oklahoma,
you really had talked
about him for like so many years. Yeah. We were fishing in Nichols last spring, and he like pulls into the pocket. And I didn't know him, and I was like, oh, my God, that's Toby Hartzell fishing in the same. Strictly from what you said on the show about it, that I was like, I got to get over myself.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny, though, because my buddy Brock had caught a 770 out of a slip. Toby Hartzell goes right to that slip and spends like 8 minutes fishing one slip. Brock's like, I already caught her, dude.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Anyway, Thomas Kanaday, Sheldon Collins, Brad Hallman, who we're going to have on. Now, this is crazy. So 13 from Oklahoma. How many from Japan, Mark?
Four.
Eight.
Wow.
Eight anglers from Japan. And I will not try to name all of them. I mean, there's some, obviously.
Come on,
some,
give it a shot.
Ken Iobi. Seiji Kato. Okay. Kenta Kimura.
You're trying.
I'm done with that. There's eight of them. But I mean, they're recognizable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was eight from Japan and one from Italy. How about that? That is that is quite the commitment.
That is very anglers. Cool. Cool stuff. All right, real quick. Brad in East Tennessee, he wanted to know, how can Mark do BTL and teach at the same time? I only teach part-time. I just teach. I teach media, economics, and finance.
And then you
And then
coach.
Basketball. Yeah. And then I'm the...
But to get to that point, you had basketball. To drive the school bus for a couple years.
No, only on games, man. I didn't have to do it in the mornings.
You never drove it
no,
in the mornings?
No.
You never were like, sit down.
No.
Quit
only,
hitting them.
Only for games, and that was it. But I don't even do that anymore. So it's good stuff. All right, we are ready to go to our special guest as he prepares for the Central Open on Grand Lake. Let me get him queued up.
Look at that strategic camera angle.
Brad,
so
you there,
can't,
man?
Can't tell where he is on the lake.
Yo. Can you hear me?
Yeah. All right, let me get your shot queued up there. All right, man. Looks like you're working hard.
Yeah, hard at it every day. It's been a hot one out here, and it's been a grind. I've got a buzzbait this morning that will not run right, and Matt's in there blowing on his and just spinning freely, and mine is like trying to reel a beer can across the top of the water.
Just for the viewers, there's a guy who stopped me at the Forestwood Cup who's from Oklahoma, and he said, hey, did you ever get those buzzbaits, Mark, sent? And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I sent them like a year ago. And I was like, no, I didn't. So I came back, I asked Mark. He said, yeah, they've been in the office. I've been holding out on you.
I wasn't holding out. They were just laying
well,
there.
I've got them now. I don't even know. But listen to this sound. Listen to this sound.
Well, it's kind of modified that because of the mic.
But it has never been in the water, and it's squeaky. It's squeaky,
all
and
right.
It is yet to be in the
Hang
water,
on.
Brad.
Bradley, how important is the squeak on a buzzbait?
Dude, I haven't had a bite this morning. I'm telling you, I'm throwing a Bud Light can. It's terrible.
Listen to this squeak.
As soon as I get off this, that's what I'm doing is digging in my box for one that sounds like bangers. I think it's pretty important.
All right.
Squeak or clack? What's more, squeak, clack, or gurgle? Like, are there certain times when you switch it up?
I think the most important thing is that blade swings freely. Hey, I just had a daggum bite. First one of the day.
Wow.
Yeah, I tried to stick a hook in him.
On the beer can?
On the beer can.
Uh-oh, you got
like
what?
The blade got hung up for a minute, and see, it finally broke.
Oh.
You see that? Where
no, I can't
no,
see
because
it.
You got water on the screen when you set the hook there.
Oh,
there it is.
It's a little better.
That piece of junk. Where is it? Yeah,
there it is.
It won't even spin now. One bite buzzbait right there, boys.
Oh, they're kind of
that had to be a giant.
It
broke your buzzbait on the bite? Wow.
Probably more my hook set.
Jeez. All right. Well, give fans kind of an indication of how the lake's setting up, Bradley.
It's been tough. Matt can probably cue up the results from last weekend. It's a pretty good indicator of where this thing's headed for the open. Generating bites is a problem right now. As a matter of fact, that's the first bite I've had all day right there with y'all, and I've been here since daylight. So I don't know how many limits were caught. We had the BFL Super Tournament here last weekend, And most of all the locals fished it. I fished it. Toby Hartzell fished it. Collins fished it. We all fished it. And I don't know how many limits were caught the first day, but it wasn't very many. Some of our friends, Ed Barton and Goodwin, had good tournaments. But for the most part, it's been really, really stingy. It's real easy to go out there and just get one or two bites, even on tournament day. Practice days, daylight till dark, I've had days that I only get three or four bites.
There were 95 guys in that tournament, and it took 10 to have a top 20 finish.
Top 20%, top 18, yeah.
Yeah, top 20, 20th place was 10 out of 94 guys. So, I mean, you catch five two-pounders, you're in the hunt. You get one kicker, and then you fish on day two. It took 29-3 to win it. And then Joel Baker, former Elite Series pro, Sean Goodwin, former All-American, Ed Barton.
Legend in Oklahoma.
Yeah, so I was trying to describe what he is. Legendary Oklahoma angler for the past three decades.
Yeah.
Didn't you find a sunken car with him one time last year?
Yeah, we were fishing on the river. It was a stolen car that the guy drove it into the Arkansas River.
Hey, speaking of really cool things, guys, I mean really cool. Earlier last week, I was out in the middle of Horse Creek idling around and graphing, and I found a cemetery. I'm talking full-fledged concrete walls for the fence of the cemetery running perfectly north, south, east, west. The tombstones running north, south, east, west, lined up. I took pictures, screenshotted it, put it on my Instagram. You can go to my Instagram and find it. It is a awesome shot.
Yeah, I just looked at it. Matt showed
That's in Horse Creek?
That's in Horse Creek. It's the old town of Bernice.
Did you know that was there? Were you looking for
it? I had heard stories of it. Diffie told me, because when I found it, I remember Wayne Diffie telling me the story about him finding a cemetery, and then he got all excited like he was going to catch him there, and he never got a bite. I was kind of thinking the same thing.
Did you get any bites there?
I did not.
How did you go about fishing a cemetery? I'm very interested.
I put the 10XD on it instantly.
Could you... I mean, I know this is kind of weird. I don't want it to be, like, disrespectful or anything.
Always thinks. But, no, dude, they move the bodies. Okay. They're not there. So, like, some of them, like, in one part of the cemetery, you can actually see the holes where they've dug out the caskets, and they're just empty graves.
Okay, could you, like, feel your bait hitting the headstones?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No way. You could get down and it'd be, like, crank, don't.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, with no bites.
Back in the day, they were just rock piles.
Yeah, so I was talking to one of my friends that lives up here at Old Man, and they catfish all the time. And a big deal up here at Grand is to drift fish. They just throw out a live shad and let the wind blow you across, the lake, and you just drift until you hit a rough spot, and then you catch them. And I was telling him, I was like, dude, there's no telling how many catfish y'all caught out of that cemetery, and just thought that it was, rocks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a really cool deal. But anyway, the fishing's really been tough. It's stingy. I think you're going to see a lot of the same with the weights. There's an offshore bite, and that's what I chased last week in the BFL. There's an offshore bite that is the right ones. I mean, like, the ones. But they haven't been generating much current, and it kind of comes and goes with that current. In the mornings, they're not pulling anything, and they're turning it on about noon, and it kind of cranks up through the day. If somebody can figure that out, it's not 15 pounds a day stuff. It's 20. And I hadn't figured it out. I tried and tried. I thought I had it figured out and found out that I didn't. I went back Sunday and tried to do it again. It's a tough deal, but man, they are some good fish. I can say that.
Brad, let me ask you this: when especially this time of the year, if you're practicing and let's say you do catch a 6-pounder and then maybe catch a 3.5 or a 4 on one specific rock pile, brush pile,
good main lake structure,
good deep structure,
good deep structure in the mid lake area.
Is this something that those fish are definitely going to be there this time of the year in other areas that are similar to that, or is this a very spot specific time of the year on Grand Lake?
Well, lakes like Grand Lake, they've got enough fish. It's definitely not spot specific. If you catch them on a spot, that's, you know, a river run ledge or something like that, then it's very likely that there's other places on the lake that are doing the exact same thing. Now, it may be time, you know, it may be a time deal, like they only do it a certain time of day, but generally it's got something to do with the current, you know. So as long as that current's cranking, it tends to help that bite quite a bit.
What kind of shape is the lake in? I mean, we know it's had a tremendous amount of water in it over a pretty long period of time. Right now, what kind of shape is it in?
It's down to about where what, you know, used to be normal pool for the summer at 745, and it's stayed pretty consistent. I mean, it hasn't moved in like 2 weeks. I mean, they've just kind of held it steady. And the water color is probably about normal for Grand. I mean, normally I would say this time of year it's a little clearer than it is, but it's got a good water color to it. It's not dirty. But, you know, we just had a lot of rain even late this summer. We've had a lot of water and come in. So, you know, the water color is not as clear as it would normally be this time of year. But the lake's a little bit higher than it normally probably is this time of year also.
What is it about these lakes in this kind of region that make them so difficult in this mid-September time frame? I mean, since I've moved here, it's always been like, you catch them in October, you can catch them in August, but this September time is just always really tough.
I think it's anything south of, you know, probably Virginia all the way across the United States, you know. I mean, it's not just this region. It's tough everywhere. September's a hard month to catch them. You know, up north, the further north you go, obviously it gets a little better because they're not going through that long summer drought. But this time of year, it seems pretty typical to catch long, skinny fish. And, you know, they've got the big heads. I just had another bite. Crazy.
Do you like tournaments this time of the year?
I do. I like tournaments that are tough, you know, a little bit more of a grind. And I like the heat, too. I don't like cold weather. I'm a wuss when it comes to cold weather. I don't care if it's 110 every day and sweat running down every pore of your body. But, yeah, being cold and wrapping up sucks.
Well, you know, he's kind of got a point there. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
All right, Brad, I want you to give the fans an indication of what a good performance is going to be this week. How much weight is going to get a check? How much weight do you think it's going to take to win this thing based upon what you know and what you've found?
Well, like I said, you know, just catching five is difficult. Catching five that weigh 13 upwards to 15, 16 is very difficult. I think a excellent performance would be like someone that can catch 14 to 16 pounds the first 2 days and then shows up, and that's kind of been the standard, and say like 17 has been big bag of the entire event after 2 days. And then that guy goes out third day and freak show 21, 20, something like that. That would be an awesome performance.
I wanted, you mentioned the word, and I said it before you came on, was the freak show. And it kind of talk about, you know, a lot of the fans, you know, me included, you look at the standings and you see tour guys that fish BFLs or jackpot an open or a coaster or something, and they suck at it. And you're like, man, he really sucked. But the more I talk to you guys, the more I realize you have completely different goals than the average guy. I mean, someone like you, you had no desire to go try to catch 8 to 10 pounds on the bank in the BFL because you were out there trying to catch 24 pounds. I mean, is that the case to where you fish
110%. That's it exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
that's it exactly. You know, and in hindsight, you know, we all look at it and go, well, maybe I should have gone and done this or that, and maybe I'd have gotten fortunate and caught 13 or 14 like, you know, those guys that were in the top three or four at the end of it. But, you know, the fish that I was seeing that were deep fish, man, 14's not an issue. You may get to 14 with three of them. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's trying to, a one-day tournament, you're probably trying to do too much, but because it wasn't strong enough that, like, you just went out knowing you were going to catch them. It was like, man, if I could just catch five of them, it's going to be a pretty awesome day. You know what I mean?
So what day of practice is this for you? Forget about the BFL stuff. What day of practice is this?
Well, if we count BFL and all that?
Yeah.
It's a lot. Three, four, five, six, seven. Day seven, I've been on Grand.
Wow. All right. I'm curious now, how many rods did you have ready to go when you hit the water this morning?
I don't know. I'm going to flip my camera and show you.
Yeah.
See if I can figure out how to do this.
Jeffries isn't going to be happy with you.
You got to go. There you go.
Just flip to the vertical view. You're going to get, holy cow. Now we got the drone view.
Yeah.
That's a bunch.
I don't know. There's quite a few of them down there.
All right.
There's over 15.
So what do you do? You're on a pond that you've spent literally hundreds of days on. You've won coasters there. You've won tournaments there. You've just fished a tournament there. You've got 6-7 days. You fish the same stuff. Do you check stuff? I mean, is there anywhere you've never been on the lake? What do you do for that many days on a lake that you're that familiar with to try to get ready for an open coming up?
Well, one thing is that, you know, we haven't had any tournaments in a while. I personally have been off since Champlain, right? So I was looking forward to coming up here and spending more. I'm going to spend more time up here this month than I've spent up here in probably 4 or 5 years. So it's a place that, you know, when we're traveling on tour, I don't get to see very often, and it's a place that I miss and enjoy spending time. So it's not difficult for me to come to Grand. I mean, I was really looking forward to coming up here and getting to spend this much time just because I haven't been able to. Is it too much time for practice? Probably. But it also is what allowed me to play and do some really weird off-the-wall stuff for 2 or 3 days, you know, that I wouldn't normally have done. You know, and so now once the Open comes, now it's more about, you know, trying to figure out how to play for a 3-day event. And so I'm practicing a lot different now than I was for that BFL. So I'm looking at parts of the water that, yeah, I've been to before and definitely fished, but I'm just looking to see what's productive, you know, and what's not. And that's really, does that kind of make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. Brad, I've known you for a long time, and I don't think we've ever talked about what I'm going to ask you, and you may or may not want to elaborate on it, but how do you consider your game as far as attacking the river section of Grand Lake? I mean, have you ever really caught them? Not up the Elk, because everybody fishes the Elk, but there are certain areas in the Neosho that a lot of people are just flat out afraid to try and get into some of those areas. Have you even went down that path before in your long career on fishing Grand?
Absolutely. You know, one of my mentors here, his name was Larry Bryant. He's passed away and gone now, but he was one of the best that's ever fished on this lake. And he was a river rat at one point, and he really was crazy about it. So I learned a lot about it from him years ago. When we had the fish kill, I don't know what year that was. It's been a long time, right? That's how old we're getting, Mark.
Yeah. But,
you know, it would take 12 to 13 pounds to win tournaments here, sometimes 11, big tournaments. And there weren't very many fish in the lake, and the river really seemed to be a big player at that point. And back then, I fished it a lot. I feel like there's some rules to it when it plays. I think time of year, and the weights. So, like, right now is the time. You know, this is when I've seen Terry Thomas come down here back in the day and, you know, 14, 15 leading stuff. And he goes up there and catches 21, 22.
Yeah.
Lake level has a lot to do with it, too, though. And generally speaking, the lower the water, the better that the river becomes. And it's kind of that way nationwide, really, because, you know, you've got a lot of flat water up there, and when the water's up, it disperses and goes long ways. There's not that big a population of fish. When the water gets low, it pulls everything to the ditch and really isolates your targets to where the fish don't have many places to get, but just certain spots. And that's really what happens up there, too. And those guys will catch 3 or 4 fish out of one laydown when it's right. And like I say, right now is the right time of year, and the weights are definitely showing to where it would be the right move to make. Somebody could do it this week, but the one thing that I feel like they got going against them is I feel like the water's too high.
Yeah. Did you ever hear of Terry Thomas, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the name.
I mean, he was an icon on Grand Lake, wasn't he?
Brad. Oh, yeah. He's from Table Rock. You know, I think the first time I saw him was in one of the Central Pro-Ams. And he had one of those 21, 22-pound bags, and I was just in awe. You know, I hadn't seen a bag that big in 3 months on this pond at that time. And I don't know. He won, like, 23 boats and a Cadillac or something like that. I mean, the guy was, you know, just incredible.
So you said he was, like, one of your mentors then?
No, Larry Bryant.
Larry Bryant. Okay, yeah. So explain that. Explain that to me and to the viewers. Like, what is a fishing mentor? I mean, you obviously.
Well, Terry Thomas, for a perfect example, also not just with Larry, but Terry Thomas had a lot to do with James Watson. He spent a lot of time with him. So it's basically, you know, this was back before YouTube and all the avenues to learn how to fish. I mean, the quickest way to steepen your learning curve in fishing was to obviously get in the boat with somebody that's really good, because then you see firsthand, you know, what they're doing, which, you know, pro-ams, you get it from that, fishing from the back of the boat in different ways. But to have a buddy that's really, really good on a certain body of water and to be able to spend time with him and for him to look at you like you're crazy, like, why are you doing that? I'll give you a perfect example. The biggest bag that I've ever caught on this lake was 27 pounds. And this is how it happened. I got on a bite in March at BFL fishing the fronts of docks on the bottom end of this lake. They suspend on those docks down there. Anyway, I went down there in the tournament. It was a Saturday, and they didn't bite. And I think, I had 12, 13 pounds. I didn't get a check. And Larry came to the weigh-in. And I was sitting on a park bench by myself watching the rest of the weigh-in. And he walked up behind me, and he said, how'd you do? And I said, not good. And he said, you want to fish tomorrow? And I said, what's tomorrow? And he said, oh, they've got that big team trail. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. Let's do it. Let's get in. I'm here. Let's pay our money and do it. And he said, you want to go fish them docks again? And I said, he was being sarcastic. I said, no. I said, I'll let you drive. So he took off, and we went to Horse Creek and Willow Trees. And at the end of the day, we had 27 pounds. And, you know, it just really opened my eyes to what different things were out there. And it was amazing how he knew where to go, what move to make. If they were in this group of trees, he knew another group of trees and another group of trees. And I mean, everywhere we pulled up, we caught a 4 or 5 pounder or 6 pounder. It was pretty eye-opening.
But how does that work, though? Like, I mean, how does it get to where he invites you to fishing? How do you get to where he's showing you the secret stuff? I mean, did you put your time in? Did he notice, oh, here's a young dude who's catching them? Like, I mean, there's a bunch of people that are probably listening to the show are like, God, I would really love to have this guy be my mentor at my local lake. But you can't just walk up and be like, hey, why don't you mentor me? Like, how does that relationship develop? I mean,
just like you said, I was fishing a lot of tournaments. I was up here all the time. He and I started talking at weigh-ins and stuff. I was cashing a few checks, you know, and he was always in the pay line. He was a friend of another friend of mine, a mutual friend, another guy, Steve Williams, that had a lot to do with me up here, also an older gentleman. And both of them were in their 60s and early 60s at the time. And I think it was just kind of a point in his life where he wasn't really serious about tournament fishing anymore. He'd kind of done it and didn't really care. So it wasn't like he was concerned about spots or anything like that. And I think, you know, I was young and he could tell how much hungry I was, you know. And it was just a really good relationship, but it just came with time. I mean, we didn't just jump in the boat. I mean, we knew each other really well and had been fishing a lot. He was in between. He had sold a company and wasn't working a lot and was fishing a lot. And so I came up here and spent a lot of time, and we fished a lot together. And he wouldn't be fishing tournaments or anything. And we just go fishing all the time. I mean, in the summer, spring, we spend a lot of time together in the boat, along with Steve, too. Same thing.
All right, Bradley, a lot of tournaments over the past few years. And, in fact, on Oneida Lake, we're having him on the show tomorrow. Guys, locals, people that have an enormous amount of experience on the bodies of water have won. Do you think this tournament this week gets won by an Oklahoman angler?
Who all's in it? You said there was a roster out. Let me hear the roster.
Matt?
You would do that to me.
He's pulling it up right now.
They actually put out a roster of who's fishing the tournament. That's different.
Yeah.
It's cool. I like it a lot.
Guess how many guys from Japan are in this thing?
How many?
8.
How many Oklahoma guys are there?
13.
Wow.
Brandon Ankerson, Thomas Canaday, Sheldon Collins, Caleb Gibson, some guy named Brad Hallman, Toby Hartzell, Nick Kincaid, Alan Nail, Eddie Norris, John Pilcher, Brian Potter, Kurt Warren, and Dustin Wheeler.
I think there's a good chance with those guys right there. There's a good chance. There's a really good chance.
How many Oklahoma guys fish on day three, Brad?
We stumped him.
I'm going to say three.
That's fair.
All right. We'll see what happens. All right, Bradley, I know people greatly, greatly appreciate and really have become fans of you in studio. So what I'd like to do is get you in studio next week, kind of break down everything, and fans can look forward on how yourself you break down your performance this week at Grand Lake. So that's kind of the plan for next week, if you're good with that.
I am good with that. Sounds like fun.
All right, man. We're going to let you go. Matt, anything else?
No. Brad's like right in the middle of it because he's got this. He's got the Costa. Then he's got the U.S. Open. But he's going to fly back to Dallas to watch the OU-Texas game.
Yeah.
And then go back.
Boomer.
Then go back to the U.S. Open. So That's he's awesome. Like living the life right now.
That's cool stuff. All right, Bradley. Great stuff, man. Thank you so much for taking time out of your practice to kind of fill everybody in on what's going on at Grand Lake, and we look forward to you breaking down your performance next week right here on BTL.
All right, sounds good, guys.
All right, man. See you. All right, there you have it. Bradley Holman, live from Grand Lake. That's good stuff.
The mentor thing is interesting because it seems like there are the vast majority of guys who you look at are like, oh, they're... They got someone who taught them a lot of stuff. And not taken away from them, but they had a mentor. Mm-hmm. Now, you look at Brad. Okay, he's a perfect example of, like, how to have so... Okay, you have someone who's later in their career who wants to kind of maybe pass it on, see someone else kind of excel, teach. But you have to be humble. You have to be hungry. You have to have some success on your own. Be out there and not be afraid to go through the ringer and fail and succeed on your own. And you have to be trustworthy.
Yeah.
In order for a legend or someone like that in the area to kind of take you under their wing. I mean, it's a mutually beneficial relationship. But I had off the water, I feel like, and I don't really talk to him a bunch now, but I feel like kind of off the water in the industry and stuff. Like Harold Allen did that a lot with me.
Well, you spent a lot of time. We spent,
A lot of time with Harold. And, you know, he'd say, Matthew, you know, maybe if he was on tour for 30 years.
Yeah.
And just... From how you treat the other anglers, how you approach the other anglers, the questions that you ask the service crew guys, the boat people, the way you treat people, when to stand your ground and say screw you, and when to kind of, I mean, like Harold taught me a lot about that stuff that I still kind of keep with me when it's like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some other stories out there of people that may have not even, you know, surpass the regional or even the local level that have mentors that have really helped them step up their game to become dominant. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about this guy a lot because I truly believe in all the years that I've been covering this, greatest weekend angler of all time.
Let me see if I can guess this. it's not Toby Hartzell because we've already talked about him.
Sean, not here in Oklahoma.
Not Sean Goodwin.
I mean,
is
I'm
it
talking
in Missouri?
Jeff Goble.
Oh, yeah, you talk about him a lot.
And I would be really curious to see if Jeff had anybody when he was growing up, if he had a mentor, because, folks, just Google Jeff Goble and check out his stats. The career that guy's had for a weekend guy that has been to the Classic, that has been to the big shows without really putting forth a true intention of being on tour – I truly believe that Jeff Coble was probably the best weekend angler of all time.
In your opinion, is the kind of mentor-student relationship in the bass fishing world kind of going to be becoming a thing of the past with a lot of younger tournaments starting younger and younger?
Yeah.
You have youth, you have high school, you have college now. And then also, I mean, this thing right here, the
cell
phone. Well,
Brad made a great point. He made a great point because of what is available from a technology.
That's what I'm saying. Are you going to see less and less of that to where you're saying, I learned from
YouTube channel
as opposed to I learned from this guy who took me under his wing?
That's all fine and great, but what do we talk about
you
all the time?
You
the
have
mental
to do
part
it.
Of the game.
Right, but you also have to do it. Like, I could watch.
Yeah, but all the stuff that we talk about, until you experience it and actually have somebody to guide you through the stuff that takes place, not just on the water, but think about how much you do off the water just to get ready for that 8 or 9 hours on the water.
Oh, here's the crazy thing. So, you know, okay, here's what I got coming up. I got two Bass Nations, I got two Costas, and Lord willing, the Costa Championship, unless I did the math and I finished below 115th.
That's not going to happen.
It happened at Avastai.
That's not going to happen.
So anyway, so let's combine all that. Let's just say guaranteed. 2 days Costa, 2 days Costa, 1 day Bass Nation, 1 day Bass Nation, 2 days Costa. That's 8 days of fishing.
Yeah.
8 days.
Yeah.
I'm starting to look, you know, we've got the new links, I'm getting it ready, the tackle, the preparation, the map study, the practice for 8 days coming up, and the money. It is astronomical, the if you were to put a hour of preparation and getting stuff ready as opposed to an hour of actual tournament competition, it's probably like 6 to 1.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm getting all this, I got this big month. No, it's for 8 days. 8 days of competition.
Yeah, but you
10
know what,
if I'm
Matthew,
lucky.
It's that way in anything if you want to be good at it.
No, I agree. I mean, it's the same reason why, look at your kid who's in football. He's a wide receiver. What college again?
Southwestern.
I mean, how many hours a week is he in the weight room?
A zillion hours.
How many hours a week is he at practice? How many hours a week is he studying a playbook?
Yeah, a bunch.
He's not going to play for 2 years. They play 12 games a year. Let's say he gets 2 years in. He's a good wide receiver.
Yeah.
In 12 games, he's going to get targeted. And if he's really good, he's going to get targeted less or get double teamed. He's going to get targeted, what, 50 times a year?
Maybe.
Okay, let's say 40 times. Yeah. That's still... Yeah. So 40 times for 2 years. So that's 80 passes that are headed his way.
It's a great comparison.
That are called for him. Out of that, probably 25% get blown up. So now there's 60 passes headed his way. The quarterback jacks up another quarter. There's 40. Defense is good. So he's got 30 actual viable opportunities headed his way in 2 years that he has... thousands of hours to prepare for 30 opportunities that last 6 to 8 seconds for each opportunity.
Yeah, it's a great comparison. You're dead on. Dead on. And I think the way that things have been done in the past, back to the mentoring thing, I think there are people out there that really take interest in people in local and regional areas for them to be successful. But I think you're dead on as far as it being less and less because of the way that technology has taken over. And more importantly, people and young kids thinking that they can do it on their own.
Thinking that they know everything.
Yeah, yeah.
This whole thing is a circle, Mark. Bass fishing is a circle. It's like that in anything that you can master.
Yeah.
You start out and you know nothing, right? And the master point and the knowing nothing point are very close together.
Yeah.
So you're open to a lot of things when you start. And I've used this comparison before. Then you start going down the circle and you learn a little bit and you have some success, mainly because you don't know what you don't know and you're doing something different. Don't even realize you're doing something different because you get to a certain point where everyone's doing the same thing because there's a basic knowledge base that everyone knows. Then you kind of get down towards the bottom, 180 degrees from the knowing nothing. And there's a little part in this bottom of the horseshoe here where most people live. They either don't put enough time into it to get up the other side of the horseshoe, or they feel like they know everything, and they're closed from climbing up the other side of the horseshoe. So then you get past that point, a certain group of people do, and they start climbing up the other side of the circle. And the more you get into it and the more you know, that's the more you realize you don't know. You know how many times I've been on the dock and Rick Klun has been in Dean Rojas's boat or Brett Height's boat or someone else's boat going, hey, what's this deal with the bladed? What's the deal with this frog? You know how far he is really close back to his starting point because the more you master something, the more you realize the subtlety and the nuance and the more you realize what you don't know. It's the guys who sit there and go, I know everything about it. I don't need it. It's the guys who are open to the mentors who get up to that top.
Great point. Do you think the younger anglers are more arrogant and more, I don't know, they're more within themselves to where they feel like they don't need help from others?
No, I think, and you heard this from Brad, and I've been around Brad. Brad could care less about the glory standpoint of it. It's part of the reason why he's won two FLW tour events and he still doesn't consider himself a top echelon angler. I mean, we're practicing for the US Open and he goes, let's have a chat. And I'm in the back of the boat and he goes, you know, you've been around these guys for so long, Matt. What is it about the top guys that win that's different that I'm not
And he
hearing?
Has two trophies.
And I sit there and I go, what the hell are you talking about? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you're one of those freaking guys, dude. You've won a Costa
who was
events.
It? There was
you've been on the Elite Series, the Tour, and you've won two Tour events. But it's that kind of humbleness.
Yeah. There was somebody that he wanted us to make contact with because he felt like that whoever it was, and I can't remember who it was, wouldn't know who he is.
Right, but also, I mean, he's out on grand for 7 days because the guy's open to learning.
Well,
and all that. But so here's what I feel. I feel like there's a bunch of the younger generation that is more driven for the quote-unquote glory than they are the quest for knowledge. I mean, look what, Polinick does all this stuff now. What you don't see, go back, look, he like won stuff as a co-angler. He fished the Opens. He fished the FLW Tour as a co-angler, won that, traveled around, was filming all that stuff. He like had a quest for knowledge and to become good at it on his own. I mean, that was before we even knew him. You're like, oh, here's this 21-year-old kid that's unreal. Well, think about all the time and hours. So I think there's more guys that are driven by the look at this moment that I can put that I can get glory
the
from.
Accolades.
Yeah,
the prestige.
Accolades as opposed to the process and the understanding and the respect for it.
Yeah. It's just interesting take. Interesting
That's
take.
Me being a grumpy old man for the first time in BTL history.
Unbelievable. Hey, remember about Polinick, man. Think about what grapplers do. Remember, that was his background. He was a wrestler. Mm-hmm. And think about how much effort and how much dedication that high school wrestlers put in just for that 2 minutes.
I gotta say this before we end it, though.
What's that?
It does not matter how much time and how much effort you put into it, and this goes with anything that you found, if you are not doing it correctly. There is productive hard work, and then there's just hard work for the sake of hard work where you're not actually growing. That's where I think the mentor comes in, because he can kind of put you in that path to where you're realizing that you're growing through that hard work on the water or off the water, to where your mentor's saying, hey, you got to have this. So now you're spending 5 hours off the water, but you know you're preparing, you're going, and as opposed to you could sit there and scrub crankbaits for 85 hours and be like, I got every crankbait shiny in the box. But if you don't have a purpose for your hard work, who the hell cares? You got a bunch of shiny crankbaits.
Dude, this show is probably one of the best shows from you kind of turning the corner. Dude, you've said some impressive stuff today. You're starting to mature.
Brad's, it's the bubbly. It's the sparkling peach bubbly. It's giving me a lot of oxygen to the brain, opening my mind up.
I am thoroughly
Do you have a mentor in bowling?
You.
You're making the senior tour. Who is your mentor in bowling?
No, I did. I did. Yeah, his name was Bob Manus. He's passed away.
What, you just walk up to him and say,
no,
Bob?
No.
Same type of deal.
No. I'll tell you the whole story tomorrow. It's not that long. Crazy, crazy story how I even got into bowling to begin with.
But it has to do with Bob Manus.
Bob Manus was the one that really...
And if it wasn't for Bob Manus in, what, the 70s?
Yeah, I wouldn't even...
You wouldn't be over here sanding bowling balls for an hour after every show.
And Bob Manus retired. He lived on Lake Dardanelle in Arkansas for a long, long time and passed away probably 10 years ago. Really, really important person in my life, though. Good dude. Great
dude.
Does
Brad win?
Do what?
Does Brad win?
I think he's one of the three guys on the final day. Yeah. You agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
50-50, because he still wants to try to freak bag it, because he's not in it for the points.
No, I know.
He still wants to freak
that
show
may be
it. He loves that phrase.
Yeah.
I'm going to freak show him, man.
That's cool. All right. I want to thank Bradley once again for taking time out of his practice to be live via Skype today. Tomorrow, the latest winner from Oneida Lake.
Gray Buck.
One of the greatest names in fishing.
I talked to a couple guys who know him. I said, hey, I don't know this guy. They're like, dude, this guy is awesome. He's like super nice, super cool dude, very talented on the water.
All right, we're also going to get into a discussion about my needs in the month of October. I need some suggestions.
Your needs?
Yeah.
Like
you're
emotional?
You're going to be gone the entire
emotional
month of October.
Emotional needs?
No.
We're
going
to talk about feelings on the show?
BTL needs. All right.
You're going to turn a corner. I turned
Maybe.
A corner today. You're turning an emotional
Maybe.
Corner tomorrow.
Maybe a co-host.
You're going to show some feeling?
No way, man.
Some empathy, perhaps?
No.
You got your shirt on right. That's
good. I do. That's the process. All right, everybody. Be safe. We will talk to you tomorrow. Same time, right here on BTL. We're out of here.